Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Statewide Wildfire Town Hall. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to our first ever Statewide Wildfire Preparedness Town Hall. I am California Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara. Thank you again for joining us and continue to work with us as we try to prepare as many Californians as possible to protect themselves against wildfire as we start to enter our wildfire season. Over the past year, before the COVID pandemic, I joined roughly around 22 meetings on wildfire insurance issues across the state and attended by thousands of Californians since the governor's stay-at-home order was issued in March. We have also held 25 teletown halls focused on business issues like business interruption insurance and workers' comp, and reached more than 7,000 businesses and consumers on COVID-19 related issues. Like COVID-19, the reality is that wildfires are a statewide problem, and the fires that we've seen already this year is a quick reminder that wildfire season is already here, whether we are ready for it or not. CAL FIRE and other agencies have responded to dozens of fires already this year and in nearly every county. If we need more evidence of the risk, the town of Nyland in Imperial County suffered a wildfire on June 28th that left one dead and destroyed 40 homes. This is in a town of just 1,000 residents. 10% of the town made homeless in an instant. And this is happening on top of the COVID-19 pandemic that creates a very dangerous and difficult situation for residents and for first responders. So today we will talk about how you can better prepare for wildfire season. We have a great lineup of speakers today, and I will introduce them for some opening remarks when we will move to some questions we have received. I want to thank everyone who's submitted questions for our panelists. First, we have Mike Ilarducci, is our director of Governor Newsom's Office of Emergency Services. The Department of Insurance and Cal OES work together very closely to help people prepare for and recover from disasters, whether it's a fire, a flood, an earthquake. We constantly work together. Mark was appointed January 8, 2019 by Governor Newsom to continue his service as director following his appointment on July 1st, 2013 by Governor Jerry Brown. He previously served as secretary of the California Emergency Management Agency, appointed by Governor Brown. Thank you for joining us, Mark. I also just want to briefly thank you for all that you have done in the past several years as one of our state's lead on wildfire emergency preparedness, as well as the hard work that you're doing these past handful of months tackling the state's COVID-19 crisis. It's never a dull moment, as you've seen, since both of us have been in these positions. We are very fortunate to have you in this capacity. Can you tell us some more about Cal OES and the work that you're doing and the mission of the great work that's been being done by that department? Thank you, Mark.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and really back at you. Appreciate all of our collaborative efforts and your leadership and our opportunity to work with your department and with you, particularly one disaster after another. Let me first of all welcome everyone and thank you for giving me the opportunity to spend a little time with you this evening. The California Office of Emergency Services is an office in the governor's office. Our responsibility here in the state of California is to serve as sort of the overarching public safety agency for California. Our primary role is really to coordinate the overall state's response to all different kinds of disasters and emergencies. and of course, help the communities that we serve prepare and plan for emergencies. We also do a lot of education and opportunity to help individuals and families get better prepared through offering training, through offering technical assistance, and also providing grants and other kinds of things. California, of course, is a very, disaster-prone state. We have all different kinds of events that happen here, earthquakes and fires and floods and all kinds of things. Unfortunately, now dealing with the COVID-19 challenges. But if you live in California, you know that that we are a place that has these kinds of challenges, and really it's important that we all understand that and we prepare for that. So, you know, the first thing I want to say to everyone is that it's really so important to understand the risks around you. Where you live matters. So if some of us live in a fault zone, an earthquake country, some of us live in a wildfire area, some of us live in a floodplain, there's not a lot of places that you can go to in California where you're not going to find some kind of risk. And as a result, understanding those risks around you makes you more empowered to prepare for the events that could potentially impact you. It gives you understanding the history of the disasters in your area, particularly in the context of wildfires, understanding how fire behavior works will help you better prepare for a fire that may occur. And look, you know, wildfires happen here all the time. With climate-related changes that we're seeing in the world, particularly important here and have impacted California, we have seen a significant increase in the amount of wildfire activity. Since around 2012-13, we have seen one major fire after the other, and each subsequent fire has become more devastating, more catastrophic than the one before, obviously leading up to the 2018 campfire in Butte County, where we lost literally the town of paradise. So, well, the first piece of knowing where you're at and what the risks are is for you to prepare. It's to, first of all, go to and find the kind of information that you need. One of the recommendations we have is to go to the Cal OES website and go to the link called My Hazards. You write your address in, and what will come back to you is a whole bunch of information about the kind of risks and the kind of preparedness measures you can take immediately within your community. Specifically with wildfire, obviously preparing through defensible space planning, clearing all that vegetation, the material that's immediately around your house, to be able to have a defensible space for you to evacuate if you have to, but to also slow the fire spread and or allow firefighters to protect your home should fire be coming up against it. So in essence, building a little bit of a green belt between where the fire may be coming up and your home. The other piece is hardening your home. That means doing things like cropping your eaves or having different kind of roofing material that's not combustible, putting in windows that minimize the amount of sparks or spread of smoke or embers that may come into your house. These are just little things that are extremely important but can make the difference between survivability of your home or not. The other piece is planning. As a family or an individual, it's critical that you understand where are the evacuation routes. If I have to get out of my community, particularly if I live in one of the foothill communities where the roads may be smaller or windy, there's not a lot of lights at night, if I had to evacuate, where would I go and how would I evacuate? Where would I evacuate to? And what's important is you identify at least two evacuation routes. And because in case one is blocked, you may need to get out through the other evacuation route. And once you figure out those evacuation routes, what I want you to do is I want you to go and run those evacuation routes at night. because things look different in the day as they do in the night. And particularly if it's nighttime and smoky, it may be difficult. So the more you practice, the more you prepare, the better off you are. As well, building a family plan, having all of your members of your family understand what the risks are, where the supplies are, what is our communications plan, how will you connect with each other. And that allows you to empower you and your family members should you become separated about where to go and what to do next. So one key area is another website that's called readyforwildfire.org, readyforwildfire.org. And that's a great source to go to be able to find out information about planning and preparing and hardening your home. The last piece is building supplies, having enough food and water and backup power. If you remember, last year, the utilities in California started to use something called public safety power shutoffs. Those were a tool that were used by the utilities to minimize the potential for fire starts in windy events where power lines could drop down and start a fire. Those PSPSs, as they call, were designed to cut the power off. So it's conceivable you may have to be doing an evacuation or dealing with the situation when the power is out. So having backup power is important. Having batteries and a hand crank radio or battery-operated radio, because in some cases, technology doesn't work. Your cell phones may not be able to work because the cell system is down. So you need to have some way to be able to have communications, and having a battery-powered radio is one key way. So having a backup power is critical. Lastly, exercise your plan. If you had to get out fast, where would you go? Your family should do it as sort of a family event. It's the way my family does it. We do it a few times a year so that we make sure that we're all up to speed. And we really run the traps. If we had to do it, how fast could we get out and where would we go? A couple of key areas in closing is keep your key records safe. If there's key records that you need to take out with you, have those at the ready so that in case you need to evacuate, you know where those are, you grab them. They could be records or family heirlooms or photos that you want to take out of the house. But it shouldn't be one of these things you're trying to collect when you're told to evacuate, because you want to make sure that if you're told to evacuate, you do not wait and you get out. I see a lot of events in disasters, and what I see pretty regularly is generally people who are unprepared, and so they are feeling a little bit insecure and not knowing how to be able to deal with the situation by comparison to people who are prepared and are feeling empowered. I also see individuals who are underinsured. It's another thing that you'll learn about today, I'm sure, but to go back and evaluate your property and your the items you own and make sure that you've got enough insurance to cover that should there be a loss. Remember, a life cannot be replaced, but all of your property can. And while it is extremely challenging and heart-wrenching to lose your personal items, what we don't want you to do is we don't want you to lose your life. So if you're told to evacuate, you listen to authorities. As fire season ramps up, those authorities will give you good information, good alert and warning, which I know we'll talk about in a little bit. And so I'll stop there, Commissioner, and happy to answer any questions when you're ready.
Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it. Some good food for thought as we all prepare, regardless of where we are in California. Thank you. I want to next welcome Chief Michael Richwine. Governor Gavin Newsom appointed our chief on May 15, 2020, to serve as our state fire marshal at the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, also known as Cal Fire. Many of our communities, especially those around the foothills, know Cal Fire very well, where he has been acting the state fire marshal since 2018 and assistant fire marshal since 2012. Chief Richwine began his fire service career 40 years ago as a firefighter with the Hanford Fire Department and has 34 years of service with the Office of the State Marshal. Thank you, Chief, for joining us. It means a lot. Thank you for your service. Thank you. I want to just personally thank you. You know, previous to COVID-19, I was doing these fire town halls. We went to roughly around 22 different counties across the state, and our state fire marshals were there answering questions. And so I want to thank you for allowing your staff and your personnel to be there with us. Again, thank you. And can you tell us more about the work that you're doing now as we are in the midst of our fire season?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Lara, and thank you for inviting me to this important town hall. And thank you for the comments regarding our staff who are continuing to work to educate the public about the importance of planning and preparing for wildfire. As Director Ghilarducci said, we're right in the middle of the wildfire season. CAL FIRE right now, we have almost doubled the number of fires that we have this year from last year in the first 7 months of this year. Fortunately, we've been fighting them aggressively, hitting them with our aircraft and our crews, and, you know, trying to do everything we can to stop catastrophic wildfires. But those fires are typically wind-driven, and we have those seasons typically in the fall. So they're coming. I don't want to paint a dark picture, but we didn't have the amount of rainfall that we anticipated this past winter. And so we're doing everything we can to prepare to fight fire aggressively. We have two new starts that are going on down in Riverside County. And so we hit them with four air tankers on each fire, just painting the hillsides with that pink fire retardant, because our goal is to stop every fire at 10 acres. And so we're being aggressive with our aircraft and with our crews. And so we're on alert. And the reason we are that way is because, as you know, the past couple of years has been some of the most catastrophic wildfires in our history. In 2017, we lost over 10,000 structures were destroyed. 2018, 22,000 structures were destroyed. And we burned over 2 million acres in the last 3 years. And sadly and tragically, over 100 people, residents and first responders, lost their lives in these wildfires. And so the men and women of CAL FIRE work daily to confront the risk of wildfire in our state, and not only through our engines and our crews and our aircraft, but also through our many risk assessment, planning, and prevention activities that occur in our CAL FIRE units throughout the state. A lot of this work goes into place during or prior to the development of new communities or new homes in communities, and a lot of our work also is in what we call the SRA, educating homeowners about the importance of defensible space and home hardening. And, you know, this past decade, as you know, Commissioner Lara, the legislature and the governors have increased efforts to prevent or slow the spread of large catastrophic fires. There have been hundreds of legislative proposals and numerous executive orders that have been acted to increase the pace and scale of our wildfire planning and prevention efforts. And so I want to take just a moment to talk about some of those important elements in our wildfire planning and prevention. Director Ghilarducci, we work so close with OES that he was almost speaking my talking points when he was making his remarks earlier, because we've been through this for many, many years together, and we know what can help to prevent and what homeowners can do to help prevent wildfire in their area. And so if I could start with just a picture of this, let's start with a home in the wildland. And we're going to work out from there all the way into forested lands, the prevention efforts that can be done to slow the spread of a catastrophic wildfire. And so Chief Ghilarducci mentioned home hardening. starting with your home, there are things that you can do right now to begin to protect your home. Our readyforwildfire.org website has a list of low-cost retrofits that you can apply to your home. As the director mentioned, you can apply screens over your eave vents to retard the embers from going into your attic. You can replace your windows from single-pane windows that will break from the radiant heat with dual-pane windows, one of which would have to be tempered glass. But our post-fire investigations and inspections have shown that dual-pane windows hold up much better and don't blow out, allowing embers and fire to come inside of a home. You can replace your decking material. You can clean out items that are underneath your decks. Don't store your firewood up against your house or underneath your decks. You can replace your siding. There are a number of things. Many of them are low cost. Something simple as UL-approved gasketing that you could buy at a hardware store to put around your garage door to seal up that space between your garage door and the door frame that will not allow embers to penetrate into the garage. So please go to our readyforwildfire.org website for a list of those low-cost retrofits and begin to harden your home. And then as you step out of your home, you need to look around for dead and dying brush, weeds, grass, and you need to remove all that for 100 feet to be in compliance with the law, 100 feet from your house or up until the property line, whichever is closest. But do that all the way around your house. Remove the pine needles and leaves that are on top of your roofs. Clean out your gutters and remove debris from around your home to make it look clean so that if we do have a fire and embers land in your yard, they're not going to make a run through the weeds and the brush and then ignite perhaps a tree limb or your house. And so it's real important that you comply with those requirements because it is one of the best ways to prevent wildfire in the wildland urban interface. And I just also want to advise you that we have a land use planning program, and we are working with the county planners and city planners, building and fire officials to assist them in their review and the development of their safety elements of their city or county general plans, as well as their local hazard mitigation plans. And what we do is we make recommendations on proper evacuation routes, water supplies, fire protection resources, defensible space around those evacuation routes. We don't tell the cities and county planners where not to build or where to build, but we provide them with fire history to show what fires have been around the area, and then we also make ourselves available to make recommendations on fire protection, water supply, evacuation. And so with hardening your home, maintaining 100 foot of defensible space around your home, our land use planners working in the community to harden the community, our land use planners will also point out areas where the community should consider making fuel breaks. And those fuel breaks create green belts, which will slow a fire from advancing into a community. And then finally, we need to continue to educate the public on how to prevent the start and spread of fires. And so I mentioned a lot of these prevention measures that homeowners can do, but now if we take it out into the wildland and into the forested lands, there has been a concentrated effort to thin that forest. In fact, when Governor Newsom took office a year and a half ago, one of his first orders was for CAL FIRE to come up with a list of 35 priority projects in the most vulnerable communities in our state, And so we did that. We developed a list working with our local units throughout the state, and we scored those based upon, we didn't want them just to be in any community. We wanted to also especially protect the disabled and the economically and socially disadvantaged communities to help them to be prepared and also to help the spread of wildfire in their area. And so those 35 projects, the governor saw that we got the funding to do that, and we were able to make good on all 35 of those projects. We are continuing that work. In fact, Senator Dodd sponsored a bill that authorized $1 billion in funding for 5 years. That's $200 million a year that we make available for fuels management projects in the wildland, and also grants for fire safe councils, fire districts, and other nonprofit organizations that can use that money to focus on preventing or slowing the spread of wildfire. And you can also use it for public education and for wildfire planning in your community. And so as we expand those fuel reduction treatments across the state, they will undoubtedly play an increasing role during fire suppression, helping to stop or slow the advance of wildfire. And then finally, I need to also speak to the public's role in fire prevention. You know, California homeowners play a key role because 95% of all the wildland fires are caused by human activity. And this means that we absolutely need residents and visitors to be extra careful and extra cautious when they're working outdoors to be cautious to prevent from sparking a new wildfire. So don't mow or weed dry grass on windy days or after 10 a.m. in the morning. Be extra careful with all your powered equipment that you're using outdoors, including chainsaws, tractors, welders, etc., because it only takes one spark to ignite a wildfire. And again, I want to remind you that if you go to our readyforwildfire.org website, you will find a lot of tips on defensible space, how you can achieve that, help you can get, and also on hardening your home. And so I want to thank you again, Commissioner Lara, for the opportunity to share with your constituents, you know, on the importance of wildland fire prevention and planning. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. And also just to reiterate that the our state budget that was recently enacted made some new investments in wildfire prevention and mitigation, I must say, including $85 million to CAL FIRE for firefighting resources, surge capacity, and $50 million for community power resiliency. So this is good stuff. Even though we are now in a deficit, we're still, you know, really prioritizing wildfire preparation. And so I want to thank our governor again. And I know today he was at McClellan Air Force Base to highlight the state's wildfire mitigation capabilities, also to discuss new efforts to protect emergency personnel, which is essential, and evacuees from COVID during wildfires, which is key, and also the investment that would hire roughly around close to more than 800 more firefighters and 6 California Conservation Corps crews through October because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So, you know, we're seeing our governor really standing strong and trying to do what he can and as a state government to be able to, again, focus us on wildfire prevention. And I also must say, Fire Chief, thank you so much for the completion of 35 emergency fuel management projects in May. That is a great accomplishment. So I want to, again, thank you for your leadership, and I appreciate everything you're doing. I want to now give Amy Bach an opportunity to say a few words before we move to our question and answer period of the program. Amy Bach is the Executive Director of United Policyholders and a tremendous consumer champion here in California, and not just in California, but around the entire country. Amy has been a professional advocate for fire policyholders since 1984 while practicing insurance regulatory law and representing clients in litigation matters. She co-founded the United Policyholders in 1991 following the devastating Oakland Hills fire. Under her leadership, United Policyholders has become the premier advocate for consumers. Bach migrated from the private practice of law in 2005 as she finally saw the light to become the organization's full-time executive director and primary spokesperson, really shaping and overseeing the roadmap to recovery, roadmap to preparedness and advocacy and action programs. Amy, just again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you've done for our consumers. You have been there with me day one as we fight to change policy, as we fight for our consumers. Can you tell us a little bit more about the amazing work that United Policyholders is doing during these difficult times?
Yes, and thank you, Commissioner. And it's just an absolute privilege to be participating in this teletown hall with you and Chief Rich Wine and then Director Ghilarducci. I have to say, you know, we live in a beautiful state. Most people, you know, that's why we're here. It's got natural beauty, but it's also got risks. And so for those of us who have been are on listening and the words of yourself and the other two speakers so far are very profoundly reassuring to me because we cannot dispute the danger that is around us for, in this wildfire season particularly because we had light rain. And so I, you know, I'm just thank you for all the work that the department is doing to help people be financially prepared for wildfires, and then of course to OES and to CAL FIRE for helping us be physically prepared, but also ready to respond. So that said, United Policyholders was started right around the Oakland Fire, 1991. So we are a consumer group. We exist to help people make good decisions when they're buying insurance and then also make good decisions when they've had a loss and they need to use their insurance and they want that insurance to work for them. And, of course, we partner very closely with the department. We run a roadmap to preparedness program through which we are doing very much parallel work to you in going out into communities and teaching people on how to sort of think about things they would rather not think about, but think about them when things are calm, take some steps, inventory their homes, pull out their policies, look and see if they've got enough coverage, if their home is properly insured, because 2/3 of the victims of disasters that we work with find out the hard way that the insurance they thought was going to be a very strong safety net for them actually has holes. So we spend a lot of time on the preparedness side when we say in peacetime, when we're not right in the middle of responding or recovering from a disaster, we try to get people to think about the boring topic of insurance and the kind of bummer topic of your house possibly burning down. But we try to get people to think about that stuff when they're calm and then take good steps. So the information at Ready, at the website that you heard about earlier, I'm sorry, Wildfire Ready, it's not going to be on the tip of my tongue here, but the very simple steps that people can take, we're out there telling people that. And then, of course, if there has been a fire, we're there in the communities with what we call the Roadmap to Recovery program, teaching people how to put one foot in front of the other. And so a lot of the people that are part of United Policyholders are people who had the bad luck. They're in the club, as they say. They lost their home, and they learned the hard way that, you know, in this context, they wish they had created a defensible space. They love their trees, but now they're sorry that they didn't clear that green belt area that allows firefighters to save their homes. We have a lot of people in our volunteer corps that will, they were so affected by the experience of losing, you know, their personal items, all those things, and their sort of, you know, their whole sense of balance, that they want to go out and help other people, A, avoid some of the problems that they had after they lost a home, and also just helping people on their road to recovery. So, you know, you've heard already in the program these very specific things that people can do. You know, the defensible space, the putting screens on your attic fence and trying to prevent embers from coming in. These are all practical, affordable things. So, you know, and those are all the messages that we are all getting out together. All the people on this call sort of have the same messaging. The one thing I want to add, though, is we do have an extra challenge now. A lot of the people in California, as you know very well, Commissioner, and you've been out there you've put yourself right out there, and to hear people's frustration that home insurance didn't used to be a strain on people's budgets. Home insurance was something that, you know, no one loves paying for it. It's not something you can enjoy, eat, drink, ride, but you got to pay for it. But it wasn't, you know, $800 a year, $1,000 a year. Now, because of the bad wildfires that we've had in California the last 4 or 5 years, because of more awareness of climate change, and because insurers are reacting and they're using technology to sift and sort which customers they want and which they don't, the price of people's home insurance has become a budget buster for a lot of people throughout the state. Not just a budget buster, not just that the cost of home insurance has become so expensive, but it's become harder and harder for people to find. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to wrap up by saying that, you know, we're working very hard with your agency and some legislators to try to do something that is essential, and that is bring insurance companies into our tent, into our camp, instead of them saying, we don't care what you do to make your house less likely to burn. We want them to come on our side and say, you know what? We're going to help you. We're going to help you. We're going to reward you. If you take responsibility and you make your house less likely to burn and you do a few things, we're going to reward you. We're either going to make sure we won't drop you or we'll give you a better rate. That's what we need. So in closing, I just want to say I think together, you know this, we're stronger. We can deal with the situation. We have professionals on the case here. So, but we do have some work to do with the insurance companies to get them under our tent. So thank you very much for having me participate.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate all the work that you've been doing. And just to reiterate what our state fire marshal was saying, you know, for 2017 and 2018 wildfires, as well as the 2018 fire-related Montecito mudslides, the Department of Insurance intervened and was able to recover more than $240 million for wildfire claimants. And so this only happens because all of our agencies, along with our consumer groups, are working together to protect to protect our homeowners and our business owners. And I have to say, too, that, you know, back when I was in the Senate, I did SB 824, which gives protection against insurance non-renewals that Amy was talking about. To everyone living in or near the perimeter of a declared wildfire emergency. And last year, we were able to put that law into effect for the first time, and I'm proud to say that we have more than 1 million homes in 180 zip codes that are protected until December 2020 from a non-renewal. And you can find that whole list of zip codes on our website at insurance.ca.gov. So if we have another state declared disaster this year, and beyond, the new law will protect those from non-renewals at least for a year and give an opportunity for families to, you know, at least not worry about not being renewed and focus on rebuilding and keeping themselves safe during and after a disaster. So let's move on to these questions. And I want to thank many of the Californians who sent us questions, and so I don't know if Mark is still on because I know Mark had to leave. Mark, are you still with us? Or
I am still here, Commissioner.
Okay, great. And then let me just ask you one question. Governor Newsom has led the effort to improve our emergency alert system following the Camp Fire. How can someone sign up for those wildfire alerts?
So, great question. Let me just say that throughout the state, depending on the location that you live in, the easiest way to do it is to contact your local fire department business number and ask them for that you want to sign up for the emergency alert network, and in the community, and they will provide you the website to do so. It's a simple process. You would go to the website. You would select how you would want to be contacted via cell phone, via text, or via landline, and then you will register your address or multiple addresses, like, for example, your home and your work, and they will build those alerts around where you're located. The other thing is that you can go right to, if you go to your local emergency management office, depending on where you live, you look up emergency management office in X county, and you write in emergency alerts. They should be able to connect you on the same way. The other piece to keep in mind is that there's another system called the Wireless Emergency Alert System, and even though you've got a local emergency alert now in your cell phone, which is very, very important, I want to rest assured that as you're traveling through the state, if you're out of the area that you normally live in, and there's an emergency, there's a statewide system that is utilized, actually a national system called the Wireless Emergency Alert, that if there's an emergency in your area, you're traveling through a part of the state, you will get those alerts on your cell phone. It's automatic, and it's designed to override your cell phone and give you an alert that something is happening in your area. So a couple of different ways to get alerts now, but it's very important to have that as part of your preparedness activities.
Thank you, Mark. We really appreciate your answer and appreciate your time. I know you got to go. So, again, thank you for all that you're doing to keep us safe and look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you
again. We're going to ask this question to our chief. Chief, somebody asked us, you know, and you alluded to this in terms of fire mitigation and defensible space. What is the number one thing that someone should do to prepare for a wildfire?
The number one thing is to take the threat seriously. If you live in the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface, if you live in the foothills, then you are at risk. And you need to prepare for that risk, prepare for the inevitable. And that preparation starts with a program that we have. Again, it's available on our website, readyforwildfire.org, and it's called Ready, Set, Go. To get ready, make sure you have your defensible space around your home. Do what you can to harden your home from the retrofit list that we have on that website. And then create a wildfire action plan, an emergency supply kit. Make sure your insurance, you've got all your documents together. And then if you have to go, evacuate early. Don't wait to be told over and over again to evacuate. Get out before it's too late.
Thank you, Chief. That's a great advice. Amy, do you have any thoughts in terms of on the insurance realm? Maybe this is a good opportunity to review your policy. What do you think?
Absolutely. So, you know, look at your coverage A. That's the dwelling. How much insurance do you have on that house? That's the amount of money that you will have available to you if, God forbid, your house burns down and it needs to be rebuilt. So look at it and think about it and don't blindly trust that your insurance company figured that out for you. You got to do some thinking about it yourself. Because, as I said, two-thirds of the people that we work with who lose their homes after disasters, and the department is has the same problem, they find out that they
right.
didn't have enough insurance on their dwelling. It's very hard to remedy that after the fact. Much better to do it now and also to create that inventory by taking your cell phone, walk around inside and outside, taking every, you know, if you have a smartphone that has a camera, narrate as you go. Here's my aunt's dresser that she gave me. You know, here's our bed that we bought at Macy's, what have you. That kind of thing can make a huge, it'd be very helpful if, again, if you need that. It's much better to have those records. Make those records when things are calm and you're not upset, because it's very hard to do these things when you're under stress.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, I want to echo what Amy said about doing that, you know, home insurance tune-up and see what your policy is and what the limits are. And my department is here to help you. Contact us at 1-800-927-4357. That's 1-800-927-4357 if you need any assistance in reviewing your coverage. The next question is for United policyholders. So UP has been involved in welfare insurance issues and advocating for consumers. Amy, the question is, what are the major issues you are hearing from consumers now?
So the first one, and of course you know this well because we are partners in trying to help people make their insurance work better for them. The number one problem for people in the rural areas and even the suburban areas is that a lot of people were getting dropped, that the insurance companies have gotten nervous and they're worried about their profits, and so they've been dropping a lot of people. Thanks to your agencies, the moratorium, the non-renewal, the legislation, we've got some help, but it's the fact that people are scared. And they're scared that they're going to lose their insurance. They're scared that they can't afford it when they get dropped and they have to replace. They have to go with a company they've never heard of. That makes them nervous. And then it makes us nervous, because if we haven't heard of the company, that means we want to make sure that they're on solid financial ground. So it's the affordability. And then we're hearing a lot of frustration where people say, I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place because I have a mortgage. I have to have home insurance. I used to pay $1,000. You know, I got a quote from the Fair Plan. It's $7,000. That's what we're hearing. And I know you're hearing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And thank you again for that. And it's a reminder of how we really need to do some serious policy work in these issues, in these areas. Chief, we hear a lot about defensible space, and defensible space can mean one thing to somebody else, and depending on the topography or the region that you live, what does the state law require, and are there any differences at the local level that people should be aware of in terms of defensible space? You know, there's so many agencies asking you to do one thing or another. What would be the best way that we can, you know, simplify, and what are your thoughts in terms of what does the state law require in terms of defensible space?
Well, thank you for that question. The Public Resources Code is the state law that requires the 100-foot buffer between a building and a property line, or the property line, whichever comes first. And it requires you to remove dead, dying vegetation, limb up your trees, cut tree limbs that are hanging over your roof, and so that your home has a chance to withstand an ember that lands in your yard by creating this defensible space. You know, when our crews go out in the middle of a wildfire, our strike teams, we have, you know, hundreds of strike teams sometimes that will order up. And that is a lot of fire engines, but it takes them a while to get there. So the first in engines, you know, they're going to evacuate people. That's their primary mission is life safety. And when they're going into these communities, they also are looking around at homes that they think they can save. They're triaging them. And they do that by looking at what kind of defensible space has been provided there. And so when a strike team pulls up in front of a home, they have a reasonable belief that they'll be able to protect that home from that advancing wildfire. Now, they'll bring out chainsaws and cut some and limb up some trees, and they'll remove wood piles away from homes and do those things as fast as they can to help with that effort. But it's the homeowner's responsibility to create that 100-foot buffer around your property. And that law exists in our Public Resources Code and also in Title 14 regulations for homes that are in the state responsibility area. Now, state law for a local responsibility area is found in the government code. And the same applies, that 100-foot buffer applies for very high fire hazard severity zones, according to our hazard mapping, in local responsibility areas. For example, the community of Auburn, they may have some areas that are very high hazard severity zones, and therefore, all the homes that are in that area, even though it's not the jurisdiction of CAL FIRE and the SRA, it's within the city limits of Auburn, that law, the government code, still requires that 100-foot buffer. But local cities and counties can pass local ordinances but they have to be equal to or more restrictive or more stringent than what state law requires. So you could have some community that requires a 150-foot buffer for defensible space. So it just depends. I would check with your local fire department and make sure that you have your understanding of what local ordinance may be applying, or if you're in the LRA or the SRA, if you have a question about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. I have another interesting question here that came through for you. It asks, are there any plans to update the fire hazard severity maps that show where the highest levels of fire risk are? And the follow-up to that was, will these maps take into account any mitigation that communities and neighbors have undertaken to reflect that reduced risk?
Okay, thank you. We were just talking about fire hazard severity zones. And so, yeah, we are in the planning process of updating our fire hazard severity zone maps. We try to do it on a five-year cycle, but a hazard typically doesn't change all that much. What we'll get is new technologies for mapping. And, for example, our new mapping, our new fire hazard severity zones will include land use changes from where cities have annexed into the SRA. It also includes much more detailed wind data down to the two-acre parcel level. I mean, it's very detailed and more spatially detailed in that regard. But fire hazard severity zone maps consider factors such as fire history, the vegetation, the topography, which drives flame length, what is the predicted ember cast or blowing embers from a fire that would be wind-driven, and also, you know, the weather. Though all those elements are put into our modeling, and what comes out of that is what is the probability of an area burning and what is the expected fire behavior or intensity of that burning. And so that is what is then mapped, and then it's mapped into different hazards, very high, and moderate. And in the SRA, these maps apply regardless of the hazard severity zone. And these maps drive a lot of things like building codes and other land use planning issues and local planning issues. But then it also applies in the local responsibility areas, cities and counties, that are very high fire hazard severity zones. And unfortunately, the second part of your question, it does not take into account mitigation that communities have undertaken. It simply is a hazard map, kind of like a flood zone map. It tells you what the hazard is, not the risk. And it's not really a risk modeling type of map.
Got it. That makes sense. Thank you so much, Chief. Amy, I have a question that somebody asked for both of us, but I'm going to have you take a stab at it as we're getting close to the end of our time here. The question is, I have had difficulty finding an insurance company willing to write insurance in my area. What can I do? We've heard this so many times. Go ahead, Amy.
We have. And both and United Policyholders and the California Department of Insurance have lots of help resources to offer to people. There's shopping guidance on your website, insurance.ca.gov. There is shopping guidance on our website, uphelp.org. We've got all kinds of, we've got tips on what do you do if you've been dropped. But, you know, everyone wants to know what are the names of the insurance companies that are writing. Our real bottom line advice is your best shot at finding options is to go through somebody that's called an independent insurance agent. So that would be somebody that an insurance salesperson that has relationships with more than one insurance company. You know, you got the guys that, and gals that sell just for State Farm, Farmers. They can only sell that one product. The better shot in this market is to go with an independent that might be able to put you with a Lloyd's, a Safeco. There's lots of different options there. So that's what we're recommending to people sort of in the short term.
Thank you, Amy. And also, you know, the Department of Insurance have created a homeowner's insurance finder tool that can direct consumers to companies that may be writing policies in that area. And that's also on our website. And, you know, the reality is that there's parts of California where we know people can't find an insurance company willing to write you a product or even return a call for that matter. And this is a major concern that we've been working on since last year. You know, again, the Department of Insurance, along with myself and Amy, continue to work with the legislature to promote home hardening and other strategies to make insurance available and affordable for all. And I'm also, you know, we've also taken actions to modernize the FAIR plan, which is our California insurer of last resort, to make it a better emergency plan for you. So, you know, we have we'll encourage you to give us a call or reach out to us on our website, and you can always also get a hold of United Policy Holders to help you. Amy, got another question for you is, what are the ways that insurance companies determine fire risk? Where does that analysis live, and how can the public access it?
Well, the sad fact is that they can't access it right now because insurers have their own private way that they rate people and decide who they want and who they don't want as a customer. A lot of them are using something called Fireline, which is a scoring system, just like your credit score. And that considers your slope, meaning are you on a steep slope, your fuels, meaning how much brush is there around, and then your an access, which is really how easy would it be for a firefighting agency to get up to your place. So your Fireline score apparently is now one of the most important criteria that the insurance company is considering if they decide when they're deciding whether or not to keep you or drop you. And right now, you cannot find out you can ask them what your score is, but you can't change your score. So we're working on that in the legislature to give people access, just like you have access to your credit score. Because sometimes those scores are wrong, right? Sometimes they're not
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And, you know, what we've done at the Department of Insurance is we've actually directed companies to tell us which homes and areas are receiving these rate increases, and we want to see the correlation of these scores so we can increase transparency. And we're seeing in every case, it is people living in suburban and rural California who are paying the lion's share of these dramatically increased costs for homeowners coverage. And we need to see these scores, and we need to verify these scores. And this is why it's critical. You know, Amy and I have been in town halls where somebody says, you know, I have one score, and literally my neighbor has a completely different score. Why is that the case? And so we continue to push for regulation and policy at the legislative level to give us that data so that we can better inform our consumers. Chief, I have a good question here that talks about control burns and fuel management. It says, how are you prioritizing CAL FIRE, prioritizing fire break projects, progressing? How are they progressing? And are there any new actions underway to mitigate the spread of wildfires through these fire breaks?
Yes, thank you. We are aggressively prioritizing and implementing fuels management projects. These are prioritized through our state fire plan. Each of the local units prioritize what are the areas of need in their particular unit, and then we score them on a region basis and score them on a statewide basis. And we're using the funds that the legislature has appropriated. You know, the governor, as Commissioner Lara mentioned, has been one of our biggest supporters to make sure that we are getting what we need to do these fuels management projects. We even had the National Guard assigned to us, and we trained them how to do fuel crew work, and they were out there helping us with chainsaws and powered equipment in thinning our forest. So it's a combination of mechanical fuel reduction projects with equipment. We're doing a lot more prescribed fire between the state and the federal agencies. Landowners are doing a lot more prescribed fire. And so there's grant money available for the hazardous fuel reduction through SB 901, our fire prevention grants, the $200 million a year that I mentioned. And so we have a goal of 20,000 acres of combined fuel reduction projects every year. And this year we've done 26,000 since July 1 of last year. So for the year, we accomplished that goal. 25,000 acres is our goal for prescribed fire, and we did 85% of that. And then our goal for defensible space is 250,000 defensible space inspections, and we were able to achieve 66% completion of that. But I mentioned the 35 priority fuel reduction projects. All of these projects are designed to slow the spread of wildfire. But unfortunately, it's taken decades for these fuels to get to the levels they are. And then we had unprecedented drought where we had 129 million dead trees in the Sierra South that we're still removing out of there. So we're definitely working it, but it's going to take time. And we are already seeing results where we're having fires that we were witnessing the fire slow because of a fuel management project in a particular area. And before I go, Commissioner, I'd be remiss if I didn't build upon what you said. The governor, not only did he work with the legislature to give us funding for 858 seasonal firefighters, but we are also augmenting our staff with 172 permanent firefighters, and that's thanks to the governor and the legislature for supporting our mission in this wildfire fight.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Yes, absolutely. You know, we fully support and look forward to continuing to provide the resources that we can to make sure you are successful. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I want to just give a moment to Amy to say just a few closing remarks, and then we'll have our chief close. And then again, just thank you. And I know we didn't get to all the questions that many people submitted, but we'll make sure we get those questions answered for you. And also, you know, we'll do that through our online and also send you some correspondence. So, Amy, how do you wrap us up?
Okay, great. So the main thing I want to remind people is You don't have to despair as far as there's always an option for you to protect your home, your assets. You can always buy insurance through the FAIR plan. They have to take everybody. It's not necessarily going to be the price you want, but you'll get the coverage in place to keep your mortgage obligation satisfied. So that's a very important thing to remember. Don't panic. Don't be scared. Be prepared. That's it. Oh, and uphelp.org, uphelp.org, or the department's website, both great resources.
Thank you, Amy. Chief, any closing thoughts?
Well, thank you for the opportunity again to participate in this teletown hall. And I guess my closing thoughts would be just to remind the homeowners that you do need to take it seriously, and there are resources available to you to help you to do your defensible space and to create a wildfire action plan and a family communication plan. So, again, I'd like to emphasize the readyforwildfire.org website is just chock full of great information. You can even get wildfire alerts through that app if you have a mobile app. It has that capability as well. So if you have any questions, and if CAL FIRE is your fire department, then please contact your local unit, your local station, and have them help you with any questions that you have about your defensible space or home hardening or creating a wildfire action plan. And thank you for the opportunity again.
Thank you, Chief. And again, please thank your staff for being always willing to meet with our constituents as we, you know, traverse the entire state trying to give consumers answers. The men and women of CAL FIRE definitely have been gracious with their time. So thank you again. I want to give each of our speakers just a round of applause. Mark Ghilarducci, Chief Richwine, Amy Bach. Just a reminder, you can reach the Department of Insurance at 1-800-927-4357 with any of your wildfire insurance-related questions. This 1-800, we have insurance experts, live folks that are answering your questions. This is not a recording, and we speak multiple languages, so you could speak in whatever language you feel comfortable in. This ends our call. You can access our recording on our website if you want to send this to your neighbors. And if you want any additional information, we'll have all the contact information for all the agencies and United policyholders on our website as well. Thank you, everyone who joined us today, and please stay safe.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
We're sorry, your conference is ending now. Please hang up.